So you know, very fortunate in that my ancestors came to this country from Ireland in the 1850s to escape the potato famine, and to come to America to find a opportunity and a new way of life, and actually to be treated as people and citizens, not as subjects of some monarchy. And that was 6 generations ago. And then 5 generations ago, my great-grandfather started a building business in Boston that started building roads when Henry Ford started building cars. And for the last 130 years plus, we've been building infrastructure in America and beyond. And so I feel at heart I'm a builder and problem solver. And I see a big problem with the internet today. I think it's actually broken, but happily it can be repaired to do much better things than it's done to date, because the internet itself was never designed to do what it's doing now. It was never designed to connect billions of people without the proper safeguards and measures in place. It's quite interesting that you ask about the journey from Europe to America, because I wrote a book about this, and I used the American Project in that journey from subjecthood to citizenship, and as a metaphor for what's going on now, where we're actually surrendering our citizenship and becoming subjects again. But this time, it's not to some, you know, man or woman in a big robe with a crown. It's to 5 big companies that own and control us. And I think that's totally incompatible with the democratic principles that my forebears came here to America to uphold. In a feudal world, and the world my ancestors left, there were very limited rights. They had very limited human rights. They were subjects or vassals, or call them what you will, and they had very limited property rights in terms of what they could own. And that's a feudal system. And we're now living in a totally different world, obviously, but one that really mimics that world very closely, because we're owned by these platforms. I don't think it's almost digital feudalism. I think it is digital feudalism, in the sense that our rights have been stripped from us. We're not even people. We're just a product. We're not even people on the internet. We're a machine on the internet, right? With an IP address. This is something that was built to connect machines and data. Of course, people were behind those machines, but it was really something that was a very technical way to decentralize communication so that it would be less vulnerable to attack. It was a project built for that objective, and it wasn't a project that was designed and built to actually connect billions of people around the world and do so in a safe and effective and constructive way that was actually optimizing for society, optimizing for individuals, optimizing for healthy lives, right? Safety of children, strong democracies, and so on and so forth. Instead, we got something that was designed beautifully as a decentralized piece of technology that was co-opted, centralized, controlled now by a few companies that optimize our data without our permission, yet on our behalf, to do things. You know, whether those things might be to sell us things, or they might be to trigger us, to get us angry so we stay on their platforms longer, or to addict us to a feed. It's insidious, and it's crept up on us in a way that is now, we now see the problems and feel the problems, and we're learning more because there's time to have done research now, and there's, you know, people that have come forward with that research and said, look at what's happening to children, for example. But we don't need research to see what's happening to democracy and the lack of being able to, we're barely governable. I mean, we may not be governable at the moment, right? Because this technology is not designed to help us reach consensus. It's designed to keep us in an endless loop of disagreement. If we zoom out and think about the internet kind of directionally correct but simple terms, the first generation of the internet was enabled by two relatively thin layer protocols that are co-joined, TCP/IP, that connected devices. Really an awesome invention and something that was built for a very specific purpose, connecting people on the end of those devices that were known to the other. So it was a trusted ecosystem that created this decentralized communication apparatus, 1983-ish. And then in 1989, a further thin layer protocol, HTTP, enabled the next generation of the internet, which connected the data that we all create, regardless of what device it was on. And also, awesome invention, and theoretically, another decentralized technology that was giving people everywhere, that is those that had access to the internet, the ability to access knowledge and information and share it, communicate, learn, grow, have economic opportunity, all the things that you could imagine. But then that was a short-lived era because the app age entered the picture, and what was decentralized and very open and expansive became highly centralized, very autocratic, and surveillance-based. And I bet if I were to ask you, give me three words or phrases to describe democracy, you probably wouldn't pick centralized, autocratic, and surveillance-based. So we have now technology architecture that is totally at odds with our democratic principles and ideals. And this is why I think we're struggling so mightily to function in the digital era, because we have awesome technology that is being misused. And if we can re-decentralize the technology to really empower people and have people, human beings prioritized, not the machines prioritized, then I think the best days of the internet are ahead of us. I do fear if we don't fix the flawed design, then we're going to be dragged into a future that none of us really want. Project Liberty is a multi-track initiative to fix the internet and get it right this time. We now know what the internet is capable of in a way that very few did 35 years ago. But knowing what we know now, seeing the harms that are being done, let's address those harms, not with Band-Aids and regulation and so forth, by fixing what's flawed, by adding another protocol, DSNP, which creates a universally accessible global social graph where each of us own and control our data. Now we're in charge. And in the new internet, the apps, the millions of apps that are created are clicking on our terms of use for our data. We're not mindlessly clicking on the terms of use of four or five platforms. We have agency again. We have ownership and control. We're in the driver's seat. And so the internet is working with and for us as a tool for humanity, not something that is manipulating us and exploiting us and kind of is a predatory beast. So Project Liberty puts forward a solution to the problem. We're not saying that ours is the only one, but we're saying it is one. It's a very good one. And if there's a better one, then we're going to support the better one. That's what Project Liberty is focused on. Fix the tech, However, it's not a tech project because we can't just fix the tech and assume that everything's better. This time around, we need to do two other things. We need to create a commercial ecosystem with the right incentives. So there are millions of builders in this new world, and they're building a healthier economy, a data sharing economy, one where these trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth that are being created are actually finding their way to the people whose data is fueling this whole engine. And we also need now to bring in the social scientists and civil society this time around. So it's not just technologists designing technology without necessarily the awareness or the experience or training to know what the impacts are on people. So let's bring in the policymakers. Let's bring in the behavioral scientists. Let's bring in the psychologists. Let's bring in the ethicists. Let's bring in the philosophy people. Let's bring in economists. Let's bring in all kinds of social scientists who this time around can't be sitting on the sidelines, so that we're actually building a framework, institutional framework, so that the tech can actually achieve the objectives we as society want, not the objectives that, you know, somebody sitting somewhere, you know, in Silicon Valley or somewhere else decides is good for society. You know, so it's incumbent on all of us to be aware of what's at stake and to contribute what we can. So Project Liberty has these three pillars. A technical pillar, for sure. We're not going to solve the big problems in the world if we don't fix the tech. But also a let's call it a movement pillar. Let's get people excited about getting involved in fixing the technology for a better world. And then a commercial ecosystem pillar. You know, let's build a new model of economy in the future, because we now know the most valuable thing in the economy that all of us have is our data. I think it's very important that the core protocols of the internet, like TCP/IP, like HTTP, like DSMP, not be tokenized, not be ever able to be owned, controlled, influenced by any small group. So DSMP is blockchain agnostic. It's not tokenized. It's open source. Now, to fix what's broken with the internet, there are a few fundamental flaws that now can be addressed with technology that exists today that didn't exist when the World Wide Web came into being. We now have the ability to have what's called shared state, so we can store data in a decentralized way, thanks to blockchain. We can now have identity online, thanks to blockchain. We can now have verification and attestation, thanks to blockchain. And we can now have provenance of data, thanks to blockchain. So I don't believe blockchain solves all of the problems with the internet, but I think blockchain is the best technology we have today to solve the fundamental flaws in the current internet. The things that blockchain does remarkably well are those things that you want to be incorruptible, okay? Immutable. Fact. Okay. So that I am who I am. Fact. Okay. On the internet, people should know that I'm a person and then I get to share as much information about me as I want. Maybe as little or as much, but I'm a person and I'm only one of me on the internet. I can't pretend I'm you later today or be a machine and be 100 things coming, spewing false information. So returning integrity and trust and truth and a shared set of facts so that we actually can rely on this tool to actually help us problem solve and help us grow as a society is critically important, because right now the ecosystem is contaminated. People can't tell the difference between fact and fiction. And we're entering a new era now with generative AI where the deep fakes are going to be as real as the originals, and people will not know the difference. So this idea of identity and verification and provenance, like who owned the data that's being ingested by this machine that's part of a large language model that someone's making money on. If it's my data, I'd like to give permission for it to be used And if someone's going to make a lot of money, we'll share some of it with me. And I think millions of people will feel the same way. It's not that we don't want the technology. The technology is awesome. It's not that we don't want to aggregate our data, because we can solve huge problems by doing it. But let's do it with individuals having power, agency, control, ownership, and participate in this new economy and feel like, okay, now I'm part of this again. I liked being a citizen in the analog world. I want to be a citizen again in the digital world. So the user experience will not be that different. You'll still have the ease of going through whatever it is you want to go through and have tailored information. And the difference, of course, will be that you're in charge. You'll decide how your data gets used. You'll decide who gets to see what about you. You'll decide what to share, what information to share with whom and on what terms. Whether it's your biological DNA or your information online, the questions are, who owns the data? Where is it stored? Who gets to use it for what reason? Those are fundamental questions. And the answers right now are big tech, big tech, big tech. And the answer should be, each of us as individuals get to make that decision. So in the next generation of the internet, let's imagine it. Instead of having 50 passwords for 50 different apps, you have one handle and you go on the internet. Facebook is not the internet. The internet is the internet. So if I want to be on the internet, I can enter the internet. And now apps can get built using DSMP, and there now I don't need to sign into all those apps because they're all now interoperable. My data is portable. And by the way, all of the data of that gets generated by all of us is part of the internet. And anybody that builds something that's of value to people has the network effect that's now the privilege of only a few platforms. But it's they get to have the network effect with the permission of the people who own the data. So somebody builds something awesome, everybody can say, yeah, you can use my data for that. That's fantastic. You know? So it's a way of reimagining the world that actually empowers people. It shifts the power dynamic from a few deciding what's good for us, or maybe even not caring what's bad for us, to putting us in charge. Some people will still do naughty things. Some people will not care about what their data is used for. But I believe most people will care a lot about their data and how it's used, because they'll begin to understand that it's not your data. It's who you are in the digital age. It's your personhood. It is you as a digital citizen. It's as important, or maybe more so, than your biological DNA in the world we live in today. And so let's return. I want to own me. I don't want somebody else owning me. And so once we empower people, shift that power dynamic, incentivize people, and give them the benefits of the value that's created, now you have, it's just as easy to use, it's just as fun, but it's better. It is healthier. It's more rewarding financially, and I'm in charge. And I think that's a much better internet than the one we have right now. It allowed me and forced me to think through the entirety of the project, to be able to put it down in a book format, to actually be able to explain this in a way that was coherent, that was complete and fulsome, and that was compelling, and do it in a way that was technically sound, but with accessible language. So that's why I use Thomas Paine as my inspiration, because Thomas Paine was able, in a relatively short pamphlet, almost a long essay, inspire a whole group of people to form and create a new thing, a democratic society, self-governed, where people had rights and of human rights and property rights. And look what was created by that. He gave people a choice. Do you want to remain a subject of a of a king or queen, or do you want to be a citizen? You decide. And if you're a citizen, then you're born with the same rights as that king or queen. They're unalienable rights. They can't, no one can take them from you. You can't sell them. You can't give them away. They're yours forever. And that empowers people, because that gives people the chance to live their lives, make their choices. That's liberty. That's freedom. And for it to work, you have to respect that in other people. That's the social contract, right? So what Thomas Paine was able to do is to say, it's a choice. You make it. It's up to you. And enough people made the choice to say, you know, I prefer to be a citizen. And so we built a great country on that premise. We've now built great technology that is destroying those values and principles. So I ask you, how do you have a thriving democracy with ubiquitous, omnipresent, omnipotent technology that doesn't share the values or principles of your political system? You can have an awesome autocracy with autocratic technology, I think. I don't think you'll have democracy, because it's at odds with what we say we care about. So why should we give up everything we care about and everything we love to use the internet? Why not have an internet that actually embraces what we care about, optimizes for what we care about, enables what we care about, rather than destroy it? So we have a choice again. Do we want to remain citizens in the digital world with rights, unalienable rights, or do we want to give them up and become subjects of the current tech architecture? I did ask Tim Berners-Lee to read the book. He read it, and I said, and he said, totally resonates with me. He said, I put a bunch of red checks, agree. So read the book and then come ask me questions.